This is Voices from Appalachia Radio Show, sponsored by the Center for Appalachian Studies and Communities at Shepherd University. I'm Brian Staggers, and here's your host, Bianca Eisen.
In August 2022, the Eastern Panhandle of West Virginia and surrounding areas will be celebrating the second Appalachian Chamber Music Festival, sporting a variety of musical concerts, workshops, and even music education programs. Our guest today is the founder, president, artistic director, and cellist of the Appalachian Chamber Music Festival, Katie Turtell. Katie is a former member of the RTE National Symphony Orchestra of Ireland and works with various European symphony and chamber orchestras. She regularly performs live and recorded broadcasts for BBC Radio 3 and RTE Lyric FM. She is also a recipient of the Exceptional Talent Visa awarded by Arts Council England. Katie, thank you for joining me.
It's great to be here. Thanks for having me.
So to begin with, I'd like to know, why did you decide to study the cello and did you study it here in the U.S.?
Oh, that's a great question. I have to say the reason I play the cello is all down to the public school music system where I went to school in Fairfax County, Virginia. And I had a wonderful music teacher who I just found very inspiring, no musical experience behind that. And she introduced us to all the string instruments and I fell in love with the sound of the cello. So that's why I play the cello today. And I went on to study it at university. I studied in the Midwest at Indiana University and then in Cleveland. So yeah.
So if you studied in Cleveland, how is it you ended up being in an orchestra in Ireland?
Oh, gosh. Was in an orchestra in Ireland, because I'm no longer. I guess the short answer to that is that music has really opened horizons for me. It is the thing that has taken me places and taken me around the world. I've been very fortunate to perform in a lot of countries. But the long story short was that I think for my own musical experience, I needed to come outside of my culture in order to see what was really important to me. So I went abroad. I lived in England for a while. And then whilst I was there, I took an audition for a job in Ireland and ended up there. When I was studying, I would have never guessed I would have ended up living there or living where I do now, which is kind of everywhere. It's how I would describe it.
And now the festival that you have for this coming fall, while Appalachia is the birthplace of American music, given the Bristol Sessions, the region isn't exactly known for chamber music.
Yeah.
So how did you come up with the setting for the Appalachia and this theme for your program series? And why did you decide to have it here in Appalachia?
That's a great question. Well, I guess first thing to do is just to define what chamber music is, because not everyone knows. And it simply means music to be played in a small space, you know, a chamber. And so really it can define such a vast range of music. But I think the most important thing about it is that it's music with a certain level of intimacy where the audience is really experiencing what it means to play these instruments, these acoustic instruments that we have in a space where they, you know, feed off the performers in a very intimate way. So that's the definition of chamber music to me. A lot of people who do know chamber music will think of string quartets of Beethoven and Mozart, 20th century composers like Bartok and Janáček. But for me, I've been so passionate about this genre of music as long as I can remember. I think it's one of the reasons I do what I do. I remember after school when I was 12 playing chamber music with friends in my little middle school orchestra program for fun. It was very, very cool. Obviously, we were the really cool kids. But anyway, I digress. So that's kind of what chamber music means to me. And I've been on a mission, I would say, for my entire adult life to introduce people to this great genre of chamber music, because I think it really has the potential to enrich people's lives and to teach us a lot about what music has meant to humans throughout all the history of the world. So having said all that, I've wanted to create a festival since probably 2014 or something to celebrate this thing of chamber music. But for me, it's always been a question of where and why. What is its purpose? What is it going to bring to people? And this region is such a special place to me. It's very close to where I've grown up. I came out to Harpers Ferry, which is where the festival's headquartered, loads when I was a kid. My parents actually honeymooned in Harper's Ferry, and we celebrated my mother's 50th birthday out there and went out to Percival, Virginia, back when it was actually rural and not built up like it is today. And I realized that there is such a special and interesting tradition of music in this area with the old-time Appalachian music and bluegrass influences. And in many ways, these are chamber musics in their, you know, most authentic form, because this is all music that's made to be played in an intimate manner, you know, very up close and personal, whether you're on a back porch or in a barn or any sort of space. And I really found this region to be so inspiring, and I thought it was a great way to introduce people who already have a love of music, a specific kind of music, to what I do, and create a sort of cross interest and synergy, really.
So tell me more about this synergy. How did this interest in Appalachian folk music become the focus for your chamber project?
Well, I guess a lot of that would have to do with my living in Ireland for 5 years, and also where I spend a lot of time now in Northern England, is quite near Scotland. And of course, the Scots-Irish tradition is such a massive influence in the music of this region. Actually, a friend told me recently, and I had read this years ago, but I forgot about it, that before all of the continents divided, the bit that was, that is Scotland and Ireland, used to be wedged in right here in Appalachia before they divided. I always think that's quite interesting, you know, the fact that these people from across the ocean immigrated here among other places. But yeah, I guess my experience in Ireland playing all sorts of music. I mean, I played in a symphony orchestra, but even within that job, we played with some of the greatest trad players in the world, really. And I've been very lucky to work with numerous people in Scotland, including the Scottish Chamber Orchestra and Scottish Ensemble, who are doing lots of similar projects. They're really looking at the roots of music, no matter what the genre, what the type of music is. Really, all music is instilled in this, whatever you want to call it, folk music, casual music. It's all instilled in this essence of music that is enjoyed in a very informal way.
Katie, how is it that you're able to put an Appalachian twist or flavor into the chamber music for the festivals?
We're looking in a lot of ways. I'm, for example, next week I'll be playing in Hillsboro with Dave Asti, who's a great local player. I think he won the Virginia State National Banjo Championship like 6 years running or something. And it's been great to sort of jam with him and get influences just by really meeting people where they're at. But in another sense, we're kind of working with composers who would have their works performed in all sorts of different places in other countries who have this interest in folk music. And there's a long tradition of this throughout the classical era, but particularly in the 20th century, we have a lot of people who are sort of ethnomusicologists who would go into the fields with like the most basic recording equipment you could think of. It was like, you know, when this was all revolutionary stuff, and they would record folk songs. Bartok is really famous for doing this, Hungarian composer. And he then turned this into all sorts of influences in his string quartets and his large orchestral works even. So I think that I feel I'm really continuing in a vein that's already existed in many ways, because I think the more you speak to composers, sometimes even the word of a composer seems like this really far away, out of reach thing. Like, what does that person do? Do they sit in a room and get inspired? And I think actually it's much more human than that. And it's much more related to, we all are, you know, we all, everything we create is what our influences are in our life. And I think the composers I work with, such as Steve Snowden, who's coming for a second year, he was here last year. He'll be writing a commission for us actually in the 2023 season, a trio for banjo, piano, and cello. So that'll be very exciting. And excitingly, we have an Irish composer, Judith Ring, who has intensely studied the connection between Irish trad music and Appalachian music. And she's going to be writing a new string quartet for us that really celebrates those ties.
You've mentioned a few musicians now, Katie, and I've noticed that the chamber orchestra consists of musicians from many different parts of the globe. Yes. So tell me about how you found and brought these musicians together for the Appalachian Chamber Series.
That's a good question. Well, once you reach a certain level of professional ability in the music world, I think, like anything else, you know, when you're younger, maybe you want a bit of prestige, maybe you want to do things that are a bit fancy and cool sounding, but at the end of the day, all you really want to do is make music with people who are really fun to make music with and who share your sort of sense of belonging in this world of why is music important. And those were the kind of people I wanted to play with. And as I've been lucky to live in many different places, I've met a lot of different musicians, and I've sort of been collecting, I've sort of had this list going in my head for the past decade of, okay, if I could put together some concerts, who would I ask and why would I ask them? And it kind of came down to three things. Number one, do get on well, which is really the most important thing. Number two, are they incredible musicians who inspire me and make me feel like a better person just for playing with them? The analogy I always give, I remember hearing this as a kid, was, oh, you want to play tennis with somebody who's better than you. And I feel like that with music. You want to play with people who have something different to offer, who are very inspiring. And then number three, I think, is that I wanted to play with people who really understood the sense of cause. There's a lot of, it's not a bad thing at all, but people get very nerdy about the kind of music they're into. And they're not really interested in what the rest of the world thinks. They just want to play it for their own pleasure. And it's very intense and nerdy. And there's great things about that. And that's obviously, I'm speaking of classical music because I see that a lot, but it's in all sorts of, you know, different forms of art where people become really specialized. There's something really, really satisfying in enjoying that side of things. But I wanted to play with people that found the importance of being able to communicate this intense love we have for what we do to other people.
Katie, do you hope that this chamber series will help to dispel the typical stereotypes that are associated with Appalachia, such as the hillbilly, the redneck, and so on?
Yeah, absolutely. I think it's really, what I'm about is celebrating what is, and celebrating what is here and illuminating everything that has influenced culture through this different thing that we do. So it's sort of like, in a very abstract way, I feel like we're painting a picture of what I see here and what this place means to me and to the other people who I'm playing with. You know, this is our second season, and I feel like I'm learning so much as I go along, and I hope to continue learning. But as we go, I hope we can, in more meaningful ways, dispel those myths, those stereotypes that you speak of.
We'll be right back after a short break. This is Voices from Appalachia Radio Show. This is the Voices from Appalachia Radio Show. I'm Bianca Eisen. That piece you just heard was Ashokan Farewell, performed by today's guest, Katie Turtell. Katie serves as founder, president, artistic director, and cellist of the Appalachian Chamber Music Festival. The festival will be celebrating its second year this coming August, with concerts, workshops, and music education programs.
Now, Katie, the Appalachian Chamber Music Festival, as you've said, has been a work in progress for nearly a decade. You mentioned you were thinking about this back in 2014, before it finally came alive here in West Virginia. So how has the initial idea for this festival grown and changed over the years? Or has it stayed true to your original purpose for it?
Well, I think the thing that has come the latest, actually, which was what prevented me from creating a festival earlier, was really about who is it for? Where am I doing it? Because I didn't have an actual geographic location when I started. I just knew that I want to be able to share this love I have for music in a very specific way with people. And so I knew that it wasn't worth doing until the time was right, until the place was right, until everything felt like the right place and the right time. And I have to say the pandemic was absolutely the right time, because we had our first season in 2021 when everyone was coming out of this thing. And let's face it, we're still coming out of it, but this need for connection was so strong. This need for intimacy and experiencing live art was so, so strong. And it was just a no-brainer to me that we absolutely had to do it then. I actually wanted to try to start it in 2020, but that was, it was a little too much. So we did 2021, but, yeah, so I guess that was the last thing that developed. But what was really important to me from the beginning was sort of what I spoke about with the musicians, this idea of communication. I think we forget a lot that a lot of the time that music isn't just about the beauty of it or the enjoyment of listening. It's about communicating something really important about what it means to be alive. And of course, that's enjoyable and it can make you want to dance and it can make you feel ecstatic or sad, but it's really about communication. And so for me anyway, and I think at the beginning of all of this, the beginning of the concept was about that. It was about how do I communicate this thing that I think is really, really important, that if I can show people in the right way, they will also get it.
Katie, how do you go about finding these different venues for your performances?
In the beginning, I had this vision of, well, what's really important for this? First of all, for just a kind of basic technical thing about playing this music is that you need a place that has a beautiful acoustic, because this isn't music that is played with amplification usually. I mean, we do make some exceptions to that when we perform outside, but the acoustic of the space is very important, as is the sense of intimacy, the sense that the audience can reach you. I wanted these concerts to feel like when we finish playing, the audience can come up to you and say, hey, that was great, like talk to you on stage afterwards. So that ability to move through a space is really important. But really, it was just kind of out of necessity in the beginning. It was, again, it was in the middle of a pandemic. I was taking Zoom calls with anyone who might be interested in having a concert. But of course, everyone's feeling at the time was, oh gosh, I don't know. I don't know if we'll still be in lockdown or whatever. So it really kind of unfolded quite organically. I had some visions of very specific places. I think the first place I thought of was St. Peter's Chapel, which is in the historic old town of Harper's Ferry, right? It's got this beautiful view. And I just imagined people, you know, spending an afternoon in historic Harper's Ferry and then coming up those stairs and going to hear some music, and the music, you know, pouring out of the doors over the Shenandoah and the Potomac. And so that was the vision. And then I went from there and found these other venues. And I've been overwhelmed, actually, with the support people have given me with that.
This Appalachian Chamber Music Festival, its inaugural festival, was just last year in 2021. And you've said that it has been both a challenge, but also you believe that it was the perfect time to have this. So why did you decide to launch this in the midst of a pandemic?
So when the first lockdown happened in March of 2020, I was actually working in Scotland and I got sent home on a train, home being Northumberland at the time, Northern England. And when I was there, I think a lot of musicians, there were kind of two things that happened. I knew a lot of musicians who just completely stopped playing for a while because of burnout or because of why does it matter or whatever. And then I knew people who were like, I have to find a way to do something. And, you know, might channel their energy into a completely different activity, but it was kind of this moment, I think, for all people, obviously, but I'm looking at it from the lens of what I do. And what became so clear to me in that period was that what I had to do, like what was essential to me, no matter if it was gonna be through the craziest means ever, was to perform. And that made me, again, think a lot and reflect on these ideas I've had for the past 10 years. what does it mean to perform? Why is it important? It's important because humans need this connection. You know, I'm not going to sit here and argue that every person on the planet needs to go to a live performance every week, because they don't. But I think we all felt that we all questioned these things. What makes society function when we were in a lockdown? What do we miss the most? What is important to us? So I say all of that as background to the fact that I became so enlivened by these ideas that I had to find a way to perform. And again, it's about communication. It wasn't so much about this selfish need of like, oh, if I don't do this, I'm not going to feel like a real person anymore. It was about, no, this is why this is so important to me. It's what I get back from the audiences. It's what I share with people that I have to find a way to do. And so, like I said, I was in Northumberland during that first lockdown, and I found some local musicians, and we ended up doing outdoor concerts, even though it was kind of questionable as to whether or not the legality around that was, it was unclear at the time. You know, it was before they even had mask mandates, you know, so we sort of went with the flow, but we had these outdoor concerts for 30 people, all socially distanced, and that's what I wanted to do in 2020 in West Virginia. I wanted to do some outdoor concerts, socially distanced, just get something to have somebody experience it, but it was impossible. It was too many logistics to overcome here. So, but yeah, I guess the experience of having put on those outdoor concerts really made me realize how much it meant to people who came. You know, it probably seems like a lot of work, and it was a lot of work, and I can see a lot of people probably wouldn't even be bothered to go out to something like that. But it was so necessary to me to have that experience to see that this was essential to do when we did it.
And now, Katie, how do you come up with the programs for the festivals? Many of them have delightful titles. Music for Dessert, Do a Delights Coffee Concert. I will be very disappointed if there is no coffee.
Oh, there will be coffee.
Lost in Plain Sight, to name a few. How do you decide on these programs?
Oh, that's so good. I see you've had a little look at our website. Not all the program names are up there yet, so we're going to have many more enticing titles. The Duo Delights one, that's hilarious. We did a Duo Delights one last year in Shepherdstown train station, so I was like, well, we have to do that again, because everyone loved it. It was absolutely delightful, if I can say so myself. But that is simply, well, it's two people playing sort of miniature pieces, you know, works that are bite size, if you will, like, you know, a couple minutes long. And so you sort of little refreshments as you go of bursts of music. I'll go back to the first point you made, or the first half of that question, about how do I choose the repertoire, if I'm going to use the fancy classical word, the pieces we're going to play, the songs. And that really has to do with sort of the general theme I'm thinking of the season. I would say, you know, this is all ahead of the curve, because we're officially announcing our season on June 1st for the summer. But we're focusing this year on this connection that I've referenced Judith Ring is really exploring in her work. But this connection, the Scots-Irish connection between folk music in that region and the music here in West Virginia and Virginia. And what we focused on last year in a more broad sense is just this general connection between elements of folk music that run through everything we do in sort of chamber music, classical music world, and also in local folk music and trad music and all the rest. And I guess just the last point on that is we were looking for new compositions. I think for, you know, again, looking at this as an arts organization and a new festival, I think it's very important to create new work, because even though we might have our favorites that we like to listen to, it's really important, I think, to find artists who are relevant in our times and who are thinking about the same questions we're all thinking about, to write music that we can perform and, you know, people can experience through whatever lens they want. I mean, we have this word we use in the classical music world called accessible music, which means, you know, sometimes people see a new work on a program and they're not sure if it's going to sound like squeaky, you know. So we're looking for works that are accessible, meaning high art that also can be relevant to a wider crowd of people.
And Katie, how do you envision the future of the Appalachian Chamber Music Festival?
Well, I I envision it definitely growing and continuing to be a part of the region. I've been really inspired and supported by the Contemporary American Theater Festival. And I hope that over the years, we can sort of become a, I don't know, for lack of a better word, player in the region of being a real arts institution that is celebrating the region, but also illuminating all the great things that are here. And I wanna, as we continue to go forward, I want to, you know, find more meaningful ways to celebrate really the local history more. I already have, you know, I don't wanna give away too many of my plans, but I think we will shortly be really taking a deep dive into the Niagara Movement, since we are, you know, headquartered in Harper's Ferry, which was the, you know, origins of the Niagara Movement. So that will definitely be a theme in years to come. Last year we did a commission kind of looking into the life of John Brown, which was really, really interesting for us. So I think as we go, really delving into the local history more and trying to find ways to illuminate that and make it relevant to what we do today.
Well, Katie, as we come to the end of our time together, you've been kind enough to bring your cello with you today.
I have.
Could you give us a sample of some of the music we can expect for this coming year's festival?
Sure. It will be a little bit of a smaller sound than, you know, the 4 to 8 players you're going to hear in most concerts. But yes, I'll be very happy to do that.
Okay. This is a solo cello work by Mark Summer, who's a cellist in the Turtle Island String Quartet called Julio.
Thank you so much for taking the time to join me today.
Oh, it's been great to be here. Thank you.
Our guest today was Katie Turtell. Katie serves as founder, president, artistic director, and cellist of the Appalachian Chamber Music Festival, who also provided the music for today's episode. The festival will be celebrating its second year this coming August, with concerts, workshops, and music education programs, with tickets going on sale June 1st. For more information about the Appalachian Chamber Music Festival, visit appalachianchamber.org. Thank you all so much for listening, and until next time, I'm Bianca Eisen.
Voices from Appalachia Radio Show is sponsored by the Center for Appalachian Studies and Communities at Shepherd University. With the following created to enhance and develop the cultural and economic life of West Virginia and the Appalachian region. Academic programs that include an Appalachian Studies minor, an interdisciplinary BA, BS undergraduate degree, and a graduate certificate and master's degree in Appalachian Studies at Shepherd University. Celtic Roots and Global Appalachia Study Abroad and Celtic Heritage Series. The Appalachian Heritage Writers in Residence and Writers Award, which support the West Virginia Center for the Books, One Book, One West Virginia Common Read Selection. The West Virginia Fiction Competition. The Anthology of Appalachian Writers, an annual anthology featuring writing by the Heritage Writer, and poetry, fiction, creative nonfiction, essays, and photography created by Appalachian writers across the region and the world. Voices from the Misty Mountains, NEH, and West Virginia Humanities Council Teacher Institutes, Shepherd Speaks StoryCorps Project, and this radio show, in cooperation with Shepherd University Public Radio Station, WSHC-FM. To learn more about our degree programs or upcoming events, visit us at our website at shepherd.edu/appalachian or at our Facebook page, Appalachian Studies Program at Shepherd.